Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing heartfelt stories of adventure in moving to and finding a dream house for the latest edition, Home Sweet Home. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Thanks for having me back. I'm very excited because today is the day that Chicken Soup for the Soul Home Sweet Home goes on sale.
I'm very excited the fact that I have an opportunity to interview this morning to kick off Home Sweet Home.
You're my first interview about the book, and I love the fact that I get a whole hour to talk about it.
Fantastic. Home Sweet Home is a delightful read. The stories are inspiring, hilarious in many ways. So congratulations. I really enjoyed reading the book.
Thank you. You know, this book is something I've been wanting to make for the last 7 years. I actually thought of this title in 2007, and it was when we were looking at buying Chicken Soup for the Soul from Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. Mm-hmm. And I put this on my tentative schedule. If we bought the company, I was going to make this Home Sweet Home book. And then we bought the company in 2008. But it was just at the beginning of that awful recession, which was, the worst recession we had had since the Great Depression. It's hard to remember now how horrible it was. And so I had to wait many, many years before I could put out a book called Home Sweet Home because I didn't want to put out this book when people were being forced to move for the wrong reason. Many people lost their homes. Millions of people lost their homes, were forced to downsize, or were in a home and they couldn't make it the way they wanted to make it. Or there was a lot of unhappiness involved with home ownership during many of the past 7 years, and I wanted to wait until I was sure that we were in happier times. And I know not everybody has had an economic recovery, but I felt that enough people had that it was now appropriate to bring out a book where we can be happy about moving and excited about the adventure of creating a new home.
Yes, definitely. The timing is perfect. The only thing I was considering when I read this book is the fact that why do people like writing about where they live?
I think that most of us, our home is one of our very most favorite possessions and our favorite place to be. I was thinking about it the other day because I was traveling I was thinking about how when you go on vacation, if you get like upgraded at the hotel or something and all of a sudden you get, say, a suite, you start saying, wow, I got a bedroom and a living room and I got a bathroom and I got a powder room and I have two closets and you're talking about all these things. And if you had just stayed home, you would have had all those things. And I think about the fact that we go on vacation and we immediately try to recreate all the comforts of home. And it's so funny that that's what we look at. We look at how much can I make this like my home that I just voluntarily left at great expense. I mean, our homes really are our havens. And I feel like for me, I would stay home more on vacations if I thought I could get away with nobody knowing I was there. But the only way to really get away is to go on a vacation so that people stop bothering me about work, right? I mean, I would love to have a staycation and stay home in my favorite place.
That's true. That's so true. The book is a wonderful read, as I mentioned before. When I first got the book, I was thinking, Home Sweet Home. I wonder what that could be. As I read, I found some wonderful stories that really connects me to the things that I've gone through in the past. What I like about it is the fact that you have broken it down to 10 different categories that really help readers like me to really absorb the significance of the various things that we go through in life when we are looking for a home and as we move from one place to the other. So please share with us the 10 categories that you have divided this 101 stories to.
Sure. I made these 10 chapters, and each chapter has about 10 stories in it. And it was really fun making the chapters because I realized that this is the kind of book that you could read throughout your whole life, because it will really take you on your entire journey of homeownership from, you know, just starting out on your own to retirement. And so the first chapter is called On the Move, and it's about the hard work of moving, but really looking at the bright side, the joy and the adventure and the excitement of moving and starting a new place. And then the next chapter is about something that we all spend a lot of time on, which is buying a home and selling a home, because you could spend a year or two trying to sell a home and a year or two, you know, trying to find the right home. And so we have a lot of great stories about house hunting, you know, serendipity happening and somebody finding exactly the right place, moving on, making those deals. And then another chapter is called Dreams Can Come True. And it's really amazing stories about people who say, envisioned a certain home and they had the whole home in their mind's eye. And then all of a sudden one day they see the home and it existed all along. This home they had created in their imagination exists. And so it's all about people finding their dream home, people creating their dream home, and also people like saving and saving and saving and finally being able to buy that first place. I mean, the book is a great housewarming gift, you know, celebrating the fact that people are creating new homes, whether they're buying or renting. Either way, it's just as exciting. And then we have another chapter about all that hard work that you put into your home, but it's so worth it. And that chapter is called Remodeling, Redecorating, and Repairing. And a lot of really good stories, funny stories, too, about, you know, remodeling disasters, adventures in decorating, that constant to-do list we all have, and some of the funny stories people have involving repairing. And then we have another chapter that's more of a heartwarming chapter with heartfelt stories. It's called Through the Generations. And it's about how you can go and visit, like, your childhood home. Like, one woman, she and her siblings went. Their childhood home had been turned into a bed and breakfast. So they rented the whole bed and breakfast for one weekend, and they went back, and they had the place to themselves, and they revisited their childhood and found little remnants of their childhood in the basement and saw how the house had been changed over the decades. And it was really interesting, and a lot of great stories about houses being passed down through generations, or maybe a young couple buying a house from an older couple and the sense of history that they have when they buy it from this older couple who cared for it so much. And then continuing in that vein of Through the Generations, we have a chapter called You Can Go Home Again, and it's all about, like, a mother taking, like, a grandmother back to visit their old home. One woman took her blind mother back to visit her old home, and her blind mother, who hadn't been blind when they lived there, walked around and felt everything and really felt like she had had a great visit to her old home. Then there's a really funny chapter. I'm sure this was one of the ones you found hilarious. It's called Unwanted Guests, and it's about human unwanted guests and animal unwanted guests. And so adventures with people trying to catch various animals that have, you know, appeared inside their homes where they're not supposed to be. And then also people who have appeared, you know, like that can happen. Sometimes people, somebody just declares they're going to come over and stay with you for three nights. And all of a sudden they're there and they're taking over. And you just watch the whole thing stupefied. Like, how did I get into this position? Or your husband's old friend comes and stays with you, and you're, you know, dragging your husband into the kitchen saying, like, why is he here? He's just going to lie on the couch for 3 days. You know, so there's stories like that. We have a lot of funny stories. There's another chapter called Do-It-Yourself Disasters. You can imagine the funny confessions in that chapter. And then on a little more serious note, the adventure of downsizing and finding a retirement home. And, of course, with the population aging, there's a huge number of people, millions of people now, who are saying, hey, the kids are gone. My house is just a one gigantic to-do list. I would like to live in a smaller place or maybe a warmer place. So we have a whole chapter about people doing that and being very happy with the results. And then finally, and you would expect this from Chicken Soup for the Soul, because we're known for sweet, heartfelt stories, I have a chapter called What Makes a Home. And that's all about, that story is all about how what really matters is what's inside those four walls, your family. and how you create memories there and how those walls basically embrace the family life that you create. And it's a great reminder if you're in the middle of, you know, a remodel project and you're going crazy. It's a great reminder to read some of those stories and remember why you have a house and what and the blessings that you have from living in a house.
I have to tell you, all the stories in the book are fascinating because as I read the book, there's a little bit of me in every one of those stories, or every one of those stories, I can find that in me as I move from house to house over the years, and they're wonderful stories. It makes me think about my journeys and the people I met along the way.
Well, considering that you moved from Malaysia, you really had to adapt. I mean, what was that like moving from Malaysia to a whole new country, and did you do that by yourself?
Yes, I did. I did it by myself. It was exciting at 18, leaving home and being halfway around the world. Then I realized that the moment I set foot in Baton Rouge, Louisiana on January the 3rd, it was freezing cold.
That was freezing cold? Louisiana? I'd be hot. I live up in the north, though.
There you go. Well, coming from an 80-degree temperature all year round, anything below, I would say, fairly say, in this case, I think if I'm not mistaken, at that time it was around 45 degrees. To me, it's freezing cold.
Yes, I can imagine.
It's like, what have I done? Am I going to be here for the next 4 years? This is crazy. But the warmth that I received from my host family, that was just wonderful. They got me in, they fed me and kept me warm and kind of took me around town to buy things that I need, like warm, heavy jackets and so on to get adjusted. So that was quite interesting in terms of here you're on an adventure, and yet you have to sort of get organized very quickly to adapt yourself to the current surrounding. And I lived in a dorm for the first 2 semesters, and that was quite an adjustment because you were running into people that you don't know. I've never been used to something like that. And then later on, of course, when I started working, I bought my first house. That was exciting, knowing having the opportunity to kind of somewhat almost design a little bit like you talk about in your book. Well, I want this, I want that color, take that away, I don't need that wall, so to speak. And that was very exciting. And then, of course, I moved the third time to an existing home, but one of the wonderful memories that I had at that new home, because it is an existing home, what I did was I took a week off and I just painted the whole house myself because I wanted to have that feeling of, hey, it's mine now. It's really weird, but I needed that.
And you touched every wall.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. By painting it yourself, you touched every wall and you made it your own. Like you touched the history that was in those walls and then you started. You felt those old stories, and then you started your new stories by painting everything.
Yeah, it was so exciting. I mean, who would want to do that? I had like a 2,600-square-foot house, inside and outside. I ended up just painting it by myself. I took my time. I took the vacation time and got up every morning and started painting till late at night and just enjoying it.
So did you bring a little bit of Malaysia with you into your homes? Did you have certain things that you brought with you to that were like little souvenirs of your childhood?
Yes, of course. When my mom came and visited me over the years, she brought a little bit of everything. She brought things like projects that I've done when I was in ninth grade doing industrial arts. She would bring all that stuff and I'll hang it in the house. And this is what I was told when I started decorating my house. It's like your house is your personal museum.
And that's true. That's a very good way of looking at why we hang things on our walls. You're right.
Yeah.
It is a personal museum. It's like a visual archive of our lives.
Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Dallas, I did the same thing. I sort of downsized and I got things that really meant something to me, things that my mom had made for me over the years. Like she was very artistic, so she was able to weave baskets from wrapping papers that I got for her. She made roses, paper roses from tissue papers. One of the things that she does so well is making paper pineapples. So those are the things that I kept. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting at my desk now, and I'm looking at a wonderful arrangement of tissue roses with the pineapple sitting inside of it.
So, you know, I don't know if this is a tradition in other countries, but in the U.S., the pineapple is a symbol of welcome into someone's home.
That's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if it is in other countries, but that's why you'll often see pineapples on, say, a stone pillar when you're entering someone's house. But it is a symbol of welcome.
Yes, yes. In Louisiana, especially, when you go into the old mansions, the front entrance of the houses or into the compound of the houses, at the very top of the pillars are these pineapples.
Interesting. Well, there was a story in the book that helped debunk the saying, you can't go home again. And I think even if you couldn't go back to Malaysia again, you brought it with you in your head. And in this story, this teenager is being forced to leave his house, about the same age you were when you moved from Malaysia to the States. And he didn't want to give up the house, and then he realized that his home was really inside him. And I know I feel that way. Like, we used to have, my father had a home in London, and I loved the home. He did business there, and so we would go over there. And then he finally sold the home after owning it for decades. And I can still take a tour of that home in my imagination. I know where every single light switch is. I know what's in every single drawer. That home lives on in my head as if we never got rid of it. So that's a nice thing, and that's one of the points the book makes, is that your home always stays with you because it's not really a physical place. It's more of an emotional place for you.
That's correct. Some of the stories in the book about going back in time and looking at the old house that you used to live in and so forth, I went through that when I went home in Malaysia when my mom told me finally, hey, we decide to sell the house to move to another place. And the initial reaction was, why? And then I realized that time goes on. We all move on, and the home is in your heart.
Kids can be selfish that way. We had a few stories where the kids were very resistant to their parents moving on, but it's the parents' right to downsize and move on and pick a new home that's smaller or that's in a location that the parents want to move to. And the kids are like, no, you can't do that. And the parents will say to the kids, but you only come here twice a year. And the kids will say, I want everything to stay the same. But the fact is that, as many of the stories in the book point out, that home lives on in your memory. You really can let your parents move on. Parents, you have permission to downsize.
So true, so true. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading Home Sweet Home?
I think that it's really important to remember how blessed we are to even have these homes, whether we own them or we rent them. And, you know, sometimes people are complaining, oh, my house is one big to-do list. Everything breaks. I never can get through my list. I want to improve things, but I'm always repairing the old things, blah, blah, blah. Well, we're so lucky to have these places and to have these places where we can create these wonderful memories for ourselves and our families and friends. And I think that editing the stories made me feel blessed and reminded me that my house is way more than a to-do list. It is my emotional center. That's really what our homes should be for us.
Very interesting. How can the book help first-time home buyers?
I think there are some good tips. I would say one of the tips, after reading countless stories about do-it-yourself disasters, is hire professionals when you can. Because the worst thing is the people who spend all the money to do it themselves and then they have to hire a professional anyway. So they end up spending way more than they would have in the first place. But I think that the book will be very inspirational for young people starting out with their first homes because it really does make you understand that you're creating this legacy for yourself, for your children. Maybe you have little kids. But it really makes you understand how important a home is because if you're a kid and you just came from your parents' home and you were in college or wherever in the Army, now it's your own place and now it's time for you to create a legacy yourself with your home. So I think that it's a great book to give. Oh, I just realized, you know, my son just got married and he and his wife, that's amazing, he has a wife, they're going to buy a place. I'm going to give them this book. When they buy a place, they're going to buy later this year because that will be a really nice thing for them to have when they're setting down their first roots as homeowners.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. It just reminded me when we were talking about my move and about your son getting married and so forth, there was a TV commercial. I don't know whether you caught this or not. I think it was some sort of an appliance thing about this couple expanding their kitchen. And then the son came back from college, loved the kitchen, and then he asked the parents, what happened to my room? His room got condensed to like a little closet because they needed
additional
space.
Oh, because it was next to the kitchen?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. That is really funny.
Yeah.
Well, my kids are safe because their rooms are upstairs, so.
I'm glad you did the remodeling and so forth. Then also I'm like, what happened to my room?
That's very funny. I will look for that commercial.
What was the favorite part about putting the book together?
I loved reading all the stories. And, you know, we always get thousands mm-hmm. of stories mm-hmm. submitted for each book. So it's so much fun reading all the stories mm-hmm. And picking out, you know, my 101 favorites.
Yeah.
It also prompted a lot of talking in our office. And so many people on our staff had great stories. And so we have a lot of stories mm-hmm. from our own editors that are in this book. So that was fun also, sharing our stories with each other.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I have selected several stories, as usual, from the book as talking points for this morning. These are wonderful stories, and these are the ones that sort of connected to me in very special ways. The first two are really wonderful, being that we are just coming off from Memorial Day weekend. There are stories about the military family. I really would like to talk about that because there's such a wonderful story to share with everyone on the air. The first one is On the Move, Starting Over by Paula Bicknell.
Yeah, this was a great story. And, you know, I always start off the books with a story that has really had an impact on me. So this woman was really unhappy because her husband had been a helicopter pilot, always away on missions, and now he was going to be home every night. And this is a common issue in military families where mm-hmm. the husbands come home and the wives are accustomed to being in charge of everything, and so it's hard to rebalance the relationship. But anyway, in this case, she was even more upset because they had sold a beautiful two-story home that was in the city, and now they were going to live in a college town, and they moved into an awful little house that had been a rental for college boys, and you can imagine the shape the house was in. I mean, there was like a couch, you know, dilapidated couch outside on the lawn, like junky, and, you know, it was just a mess. And so it was really, their marriage was going through a lot, but she soldiered on, pun, and her husband put a foosball table in the living room, and she said, I don't want a foosball table in the living room, and he made a really good point that if he and the kids played foosball every night in the living room, the kids wouldn't be watching TV, which was really a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, over the next couple of months, they cleaned up this dirty old rental house. They worked on the yard a lot. They built a fire pit. And then she started watching her husband become the dad he had never had the chance to be because he was always away on missions.
Mm-hmm.
And she started falling in love with her husband all over again as they lived in this awful little rental house. And she said the rental wasn't much to look at, but because of what it did for their family, she said that funky little house became our home. And basically it was where she started over her relationship with her mm-hmm. husband, and he started over his relationship with her and the children. And they ended up having four more sons as a result of that reconciliation in that house. So it was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was very appropriate, and I always do try to put in stories from military families when we get them because I want to make sure that all of our books have something for the people who are serving us.
So true. The second one is just as wonderful as the first one in a different perspective, so to speak. On the Move Again, that's the category that it's in, Celebrating the Tears by Kim Stokely.
Yeah, I started this story off with a really wonderful quote, which is very apropos for people who move a lot. And the quote is from an author who is unknown, but The quote is, "Today I close the door to the past, open the door to future, take a deep breath, step on through, and start a new chapter in my life." And this woman, Kim, was dreading moving day. She had married her husband, John, who was an officer in the Navy, so she knew they would have to move often. But she just hadn't known how hard it would be. She had grown up in one house that she'd lived in for 22 years. So she sat at her kitchen table that night of moving day, and she called her mother-in-law, who had moved a lot during her married life, and she said, "How can you possibly do this?" And her mother-in-law said, "I've lived in more houses in more states than I can count, and I listened to a lot of wives moan and groan with each new transfer, and I decided not to be that way." And her mother-in-law explained that she thought of each move as a new adventure, and each place they went, she decided that they would explore that place like they were tourists, and they would really get the most possible out of that place. And, you know, it's true. You move someplace, you don't think about acting like a tourist. I mean, I've lived in Connecticut 25 years, and I haven't been to all the tourist attractions here. But this woman was really smart. Every place they moved, they piled into the car, they drove around, they visited everything, and they got to know their new state really well. And so over the years, they made the most of every place they went. And so Kim decided she would do the same thing, and now she's been a military wife for 20 years, and they have had fabulous stays in every place they've lived, in New England, in California, in Florida. And, you know, I have to say also, I think with the Internet it makes it a lot easier because you are able to make new friends and know that you will be able to keep them. And that's not something that we had, say, 20 or 30 years ago. So I think with the Internet you really can continue to have those contacts all over, and you don't feel when you move like it's a total separation from your home.
So true. The next category is buying and selling. The story is titled The Auction by Maureen Rogers. The reason why I selected this story is because nowadays on TV, they have so many of those shows about flipping houses, buying houses at auctions and so forth, and you can see some of the horror stories that went through people's lives. But this is a wonderful story. Please share this story with us.
Yeah, this was a great story about having a dream in mind and then taking a risk and making the dream come true, because these people were living out in the suburbs of Seattle, and they really wanted to move downtown. It was part of their downsizing, and they wanted a small house downtown with close proximity to all of the cool things that Seattle has to offer, but they also wanted an open feeling and a great view. And so they kept looking and looking and looking, and they couldn't find anything. And then they saw a house that had a sign posted, and they went to look up at it, and it turned out it was a foreclosure. Now, they couldn't go inside the house. It was all locked up. All they could do was peer in the dirty windows and try to see what it looked like inside. But they could see the views. And you know what they say, location, location, location. They knew for sure the location was great. They didn't know how bad the house was going to be inside, but when they peeked inside, it looked like it was an ancient kitchen. But also the fact that it was kind of everything was ancient also meant that the hardwood floors were high quality because they were old, and since nobody had done anything, they hadn't been sanded too many times. So, you know, the house had good bones. And so they took a risk. They bid in the auction. They didn't win, because they didn't hit the minimum, and nobody had hit the minimum that they required. And they got a phone call saying, "You have to go up," but nobody would tell them how much. So they just hoped that the maximum they were willing to spend would be enough, because they only had one shot at this. They bid their maximum. They had to wait 3 weeks to find out if they got it, and they did get it. And it turned out there were no negative surprises when they went in the house. And they have their fabulous view, and they're really, really happy that they took the risk and made their dream come true.
Sometimes you have to just step up to the plate. And
you
do.
You do. And, you know, it's not life or death.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a piece of property. So if you took that risk and it didn't work out, you literally move on, you know? I mean, it isn't life or death. You're not risking your life when you do this. But sometimes, I mean, we have a number of stories in here where people took a risk
mm-hmm.
and it worked mm-hmm. out great, and they got their dream home as a result.
Mm-hmm. The next one is in the same category, Buying and Selling, How to Speak Realtor by Laurie Sontosh. This is a wonderful story because it's hilarious to me.
Yeah, and you know, I see those ads all the time where they say, like, cozy and charming. You
yeah,
know that,
yeah.
like, if you stand with your arms out, you're going to be able to reach all the walls in the rooms, right?
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Original fixtures means, you know, people never did anything and you have a 1950s kitchen. So anyway, she talked about how to speak realtor in phrases like, dripping with charm, that means the mm-hmm. roof leaks. Views, views, views. That might mean that on a clear day, if you cantilever yourself out the living room window, turn and squint, you might see a mountain off in the distance. You know, handyman special, you know you're in trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means the place almost needs to be razed. Ready for you to make your own means there's nothing in there. They took everything. Mm-hmm. The sink is gone. Everything is gone. She said the house that she got was called Entertainer's Dream.
Mm-hmm.
She said what that actually meant was a group of rowdy teenagers had broken into the house while it was vacant and had a party and left the empty keg, the beer-stained carpet, and cigarette butts all over in the overflowing toilets. So she said that's what Entertainer's Dream meant when she bought her house. So it was funny because, yeah, we all do know that realtors have a different language.
And I've used some of the languages on her sheet. When I sold my house, when I moved to Dallas and my house was still on the market, using the word motivated seller.
Oh, yeah, motivated seller means you've been trying a really long time and you're desperate.
That's right. But I'm not
yeah.
that desperate. You know, it's like, okay, uh-huh, yeah, if you don't meet my minimum, surely I'm not going to let the house go.
Yeah, you have a secret number in mind that will do it.
That's right. That's right. The next one is in the category of Dreams Come True. I really like this story because the way she ends it, and she realized that even though they were building the house together, but what's most important is the company she's with. So, but I'll let you tell the story, Building a Dream by Betsy Franz.
So Betsy is one of these women who really likes to get dirty, do work, use tools, drill things, saw things, hammer things, carry things, construct things. She loves that. And so one of her dreams had always been to build her own home. And she had this idea that she would build her own home and she would be with her soulmate while she was doing it. You know, a man who wanted to do the same thing and didn't mind if she had sawdust in her hair and was all sweaty and wearing a tool belt. Miracle upon miracle, she actually found her dream man at the same time that she got an inheritance. And the inheritance allowed her, with her dream man, to buy the perfect piece of land, and then they started building their house. Then she learned that she couldn't actually build the dream house she had thought of because it was way too expensive, and she learned that, you know, building your dream house involves a lot of compromises. But the compromise she didn't have to make was in having found her soulmate, because she said that she learned that her dream wasn't really a house of wood and block and glass. Her real dream was that she would find that guy who would accept her with sawdust in her hair and sweat dripping off her nose and dirt on her chin. And it was really the process of building the house together that was her dream, not the actual house that she got.
So true. This is a wonderful love story, actually.
It is. And now, the next story that I know you loved is kind of the opposite kind of man. So this is a guy named Ernie Whittem, and Ernie is a really funny writer. And we occasionally publish one of his hysterically funny stories.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one is Ernie's characterization of what the rest of the men are like. Because his characterization is that most of them don't want to do anything around the house, don't want to pick up a tool. So he writes about a bunch of real men sitting around on the display toilets at the Home Depot. And he said they're all sitting on the toilets perusing the Home Depot catalog, because he said you should be in your normal catalog perusing location, which was sitting on these toilets. So there's all these men sitting in the bath department at Home Depot reading catalogs while their wives walk around the store buying things for them to do when they get home. And the men just sit there on the display toilets dreading that they're going to have to go home and do all of these projects. And so it's just really, really funny. You know, you have guys saying, like, one guy said his wife wanted him to put in a He-Man-sized tub with finger massage jets, and another guy says, yeah, wouldn't that feel good after a grueling day of football? And another guy says, yeah, my back is always killing me after 5 or 6 hours on the couch watching football. And another guy says, I have a garage full of easy-to-install stuff, you know, that his wife got for him. So it's a look at the other kind of man that a lot of us live with. I think a lot of the wives will appreciate that one. And it's fun that it's
really
a man
funny.
Poking fun at himself.
And, of course, the idea that the man have to put together everything that the wife buys from Home Depot and from Lowe's and so forth.
That's right.
And it's never that easy, even though it comes with instructions, but the man doesn't want to do that. And you're right, Ernie is such a wonderful writer because it just grabs you from the first paragraph that he writes. It's just a wonderful story.
It really is.
The next category is Through the Generations. I selected actually two stories from this section because I have personal experience with it from a standpoint of just the connections that you build with people along the way. The first one is Love Lives Here by Ken Hooklock.
Yeah, so that was really nice because that was what I was talking about before, where you buy your house and it has all this history and you're buying it with the old stories from the previous owners. And it's really nice if you like the previous owners and if you have a sense of their history. And in this case, Ken bought a house from a couple who were in their mid-80s, and they had decided to downsize. And they had done a beautiful job of keeping the house up. Even as they got older, they kept it in perfect condition. And they had done everything, even putting those roof heaters on to melt the snow. All of us up here in the East, in the Northeast, know about that, because if you don't put those on, the ice melts and the water goes back under your shingles and you have all kinds of leaks. They had done everything. They had kept up with all the modern technology. And so he met this wonderful couple at the closing, and then they found a CD of photos that the couple had left behind by accident in an old piece of furniture, and so they returned it to them, and then they started to become friends with the couple. And when they wanted to dig up the rose bushes, it occurred to Ken that often people who plant rose bushes really love their rose bushes and care for them. And Ken knew that he and his wife weren't going to do that. And so they contacted the former owners and said, would you like to come and get your old rose bushes? And they did. They came and they dug up their rose bushes and moved them to their new place. And they were so grateful. And so they kept in touch with the family over all those years, and I think that's so wonderful to have a sense of the complete history of your home. I know in my case, I know some of the people who have lived in my house over the years, and I know different things that happened in my house over the 35 years that my house has been in existence, and it's nice to have that history.
Right, right. It's just a wonderful story. The next one is A Place of Love by John Buontello.
So John was raised by a single mom, and she struggled to raise him and his brother. And they had moved to California from Texas because his mom was going to get a better job there. But then her job ended, and they had to go back to Texas. And he was okay with going back to his hometown in Texas and returning to his old school, but they didn't have enough money to return to Texas and even rent an apartment. There was just no money. And so they went to live with their grandmother out in the country, and they didn't even know their grandmother, and they were on a farm. And so they had to start getting up early in the morning to take care of the farm animals. They had to harvest vegetables from the garden. They lived in this really dilapidated farmhouse that was more like a shack. And, I mean, one night the boys found a turtle, and so they were really excited, and they built a little house for their pet turtle, and they showed it to their grandma, and she smiled and nodded. She only spoke Spanish, and they only spoke English. They sat down and had a chicken dinner, and then John found out from his sister that they ate the turtle. The grandma thought he was giving her the turtle to fry up for dinner. She didn't understand they wanted it as a pet. But anyway, they lived through all of this, and over time he developed an appreciation, and he realized that even when his mom finally got enough money to move them back to the city into an apartment, that he really did have a home with his grandma. And it was certainly an interesting lesson for a young kid to see the difference in the way that people lived.
Very interesting. It brought back stories as well as things that I went through when I was young growing up. My parents and I lived in the city, but however, my grandmother lives in the country. So I really enjoyed visiting her whenever I get a chance to. The things that I do in the village are so much different than in the city. And I remember there was one time I fell into a huge hole where the buffalo takes a bath, and my cousins helped me out, and then we took my clothes off, and they tried to dry my clothes off over a fire. My mother would not get mad at me. You know, I mean, we were looking out for each other, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it didn't dry up as well. The intent was there, but it's just a funny connection that you can build, and that comes back to the idea of being around loved ones and the love for one another, you know, among families and so forth.
That's true. That's true. I liked it a lot that he lived there. And he's one of our regular contributors, John Buentello.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nowadays also, the fact that you have people moving back in with their relatives and their families, and this section to me allows people to really look at the real connection that they can build within their family.
Yeah, because a lot of kids wouldn't otherwise have a chance to really get to know their grandparents.
Mm-hmm. So much so. The next one is in the category of do-it-yourself disasters. This is really funny, As Seen on TV by Letitia Madison.
This is a very funny story. So Letitia says, the TV commercial made it look easy. All you had to do was use this product and your tired, old, worn-out deck would look like a brand-new deck. You just painted over the old wood and your deck was as good as new. So she went to the store. She bought this product. Of course, one thing leads to another. She finds out you can't just paint this stuff on the deck. First, she has to power wash the deck. So she has all these adventures renting a power washer and getting sopping wet and trying to power wash her deck. Then she has to apply primer to her deck. She had thought, oh, I'm just going to go and buy this product, put it down, and I'll have my friends over for wine and cheese the next day. So then instead she has to power wash, let the deck dry. Then she has to put primer down, let the deck dry. Then she opens up the can of the miracle product that's going to make her old deck look like a new deck, and she discovers that the product inside the can is incredibly hard, and she has to warm it up. It says warm it up, and she's thinking, how do I warm up a can of paint? So she has to go and take towels and put them in the microwave and warm them up and then wrap them around the paint so the paint will become liquidy enough for her to apply it. So then she applies paint to the deck, and it doesn't look very good at all, but she thinks, well, maybe it will dry and it will look good. So then the next morning she goes out and she looks at it, and it's covered with paw prints. It looked like a gang of raccoons had invaded her deck, had a party, and danced until dawn. Her paint job was ruined. And then she says, at that point, she realized what a stupid idea this had been. She threw all her painting supplies in the trash, and she called a deck building company. And she said, how could I have believed that a paint product would make my deck new again? The only thing that would make my deck new was a new deck. And so she had them come and rip off the old one and build a new deck for her. And it was very funny and also a really good cautionary tale for people who think there's a quick and easy way around, because there is never a quick and easy way around a home project. I don't think we have a single story in here about a home project going well. They never go well, and they never are quick and easy.
And I like the quote before the story. The plumber came by this morning, and the painter is due on Monday. My checkbook open and ready for it. I did it myself just last Sunday, by Amy Newmark.
So I wrote that when I was in sixth grade. It was looking for a home all those years. I wrote that little poem when I was in sixth grade. So here, I decided this was the perfect place to put it. And I think when I was in sixth grade, I have this vague memory that I submitted that to the Wall Street Journal, and they ran it because they used to have these little, like, cute little comments in the Wall Street Journal. And I think that got published by the Wall Street Journal all the way back then.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, my first published writing.
You got to claim that, you see, so that's wonderful. The next one is story about downsizing, and this is really hilarious in some ways. I enjoyed the story. I thought it was really, really funny. Downsizing and retiring is the category, and the story is Owl Mayberry by Andrea Peebles.
Yeah, Andrea is a great writer. She writes stories for us all the time, and I guess you know what Mayberry is. It was the Andy Griffith show, right?
Mm-hmm,
And so that was that sweet little town. And she said that when their children were gone, her husband really wanted to move someplace that was a sweet little town with a slower pace and had some land. And she thought that meant, you know, buying 3 acres in the suburbs. But no, he meant a lot of land and really far away. And so he found a place that was 50 miles away from Atlanta and very, you know, very secluded in a little farming community. So they moved there. And she didn't really like it initially. It was 45 miles to the nearest mall. It was 7 miles to a tiny grocery store. There was no place to go out to eat. There was no cable TV, no trash pickup. They had to use well water. They had to use propane. And she didn't really get to meet her neighbors except for the neighbor who came by and said that there was a property dispute with them. There was a boundary dispute that had started 20 years earlier, which she didn't know about when they bought the house, so they had to spend thousands of dollars resolving that boundary dispute with their neighbor. It wasn't until the following spring when there was a surprise spring snow. They got 15 inches of snow, you know, only 50 miles from Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and all the power went out, and a neighbor came by and told them, when the power goes out down here, it's out for 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, all of their distant neighbors came together and started helping each other. So she and her husband had their son with them who had his baby, and the neighbors all tramped around in the snow, walking miles to gather diapers and other baby supplies for her. And everybody got together, and she finally realized they really were in Mayberry, where all the neighbors would take care of each other. And so now she's happy with their move to the middle of nowhere.
I thought the story was hilarious because the fact that they were looking for a house for the last 3 years and her husband found this place on a map.
Oh, that's true. He just pointed to a little town on a map and he said, that's where we should go and look. And he had never been there. He didn't know if there was anything on the market there. And he just picked it on a map because he said, it's 50 miles from Atlanta, but there's a good highway going from there back to Atlanta so we can still work downtown.
The next and final story that I like from the book, and again, there's so many wonderful stories. These are stories that I thought that really made an impact at me and in some ways will make an impact to our listeners from the standpoint of the things that we are currently going through in life. This is just a wonderful, wonderful story. What Makes a Home? 57 Steps to Paradise by Patricia Lorenz.
Yes, yeah, so Patricia remarried when she was 66 and her new husband was 75. And they knew each other because they lived on the same floor in a condo complex that mostly had older people in it. And there didn't really seem to be any reason for them to give up one of their condos. So they kept both condos, but they got married. And what they did was they did some things in her condo and some things in his condo. So she kept her condo. She's a professional writer and speaker, so she kept her condo as her office. She got to keep her kitchen the way she liked it. She's into way more healthy foods than he is. He got to keep his junk food in his condo. his condo has three different places where you can lie around and watch sports on TV. Her condo has no place like that for lying around and watching TV. And so the system they have now is they sleep at his condo, and she moved most of her clothes and jewelry there. Then in the morning they wake up, they go to water aerobics across the street, then they go back to his condo for breakfast, and then after breakfast, around 11, she meanders down the hallway to her condo, 57 steps away, and that's where she spends the day. She prepares a healthy lunch for herself. He eats junk food back at his place, and she prepares their evening meal in her condo. Then he comes to her condo at dinner time. They have dinner together. It's like a date, right? It's like every day they're going on a date.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then if there's a lot of sports that he wants to watch, he goes back to his condo to watch sports. And if they're going to do something else, they go to her condo. And then around 11, she goes back over to his place, and they go to sleep there. And so they've worked out this really wonderful system where they're both very happy. They didn't have to give up anything when they got married. And and it's just a really nice thing and a good lesson for people that you can have these unconventional living arrangements and they work out just fine.
So true. And especially when you have two people that have really lived a life of independence, now you having an opportunity to get a second chance at living with another new partner. And how do you make that work? The way you make it work is your ability to still keep the things that are dear to you, and at the same time, you find that commonality that both shares that really what brought them together in the first place.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, everybody should be willing to flout convention and do what works for them.
Wonderful. What are some of the funny stories you like in the book?
Oh, my gosh. I say half the book is funny stories, but I don't know why. This one is a little bit of bathroom humor, but yeah. I really like this story where this father is very, very proud because his two-year-old daughter is pointing with great excitement into the toilet and saying, "Poo, poo." And so he's very proud of her because she's learning about, you know, using the toilet. And he's like, "Oh, honey, I'm so proud of you. You can throw away your Pampers now." And she keeps going, "Poo, poo," and pointing at the toilet. So he's really excited. The next day, his wife says, "The toilet is stopped up. You have to fix it this time." And it's the only toilet they have in their home. They're a young couple just starting out. And so he has to take the whole toilet apart, and he finally takes it apart and finds inside it her Winnie the Pooh doll. That's why she kept saying poo all that time. She wasn't saying P-O-O. She was saying P-O-O-H. She was trying to say, "Daddy, I flushed my Winnie the Pooh down the toilet." So I just thought that was very funny.
It is. Is there a particular story that struck a chord in you?
Gosh, so many of them did. Let's see. I think there was one in particular, though. I think it was story 12, and let me see if I can find it now. Because I remember, I think it was 12 that I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, this is a great one. This is about a couple who went off on a vacation. They lived in Houston, and they threw some camping gear in their car and some road maps, and they set off to drive west. And as they were driving, they passed through a little town in Arizona called Sedona. And they were on their way to Phoenix. But as they started driving through Sedona, they were just awestruck. They couldn't believe how beautiful it was. They loved the winding road. They loved the mountains. They loved the towering pine trees. They loved the desert views. They loved everything about it. And all of a sudden, they both had the same thought, that they had to move to Sedona. It was completely unplanned. This was a spontaneous decision. They drove back to Houston. She sold her business. They sold their home. They researched Sedona homes online. And they went and they bought a place in Sedona and moved to Sedona just like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was so cool because it was just like Sedona reached out and grabbed them. And mm-hmm. they had no idea that they were going to move to their retirement home. And sure enough, they did. And I love the fact that they were so spontaneous.
It's a wonderful story. I like that one, too. And the fact that somehow she was spiritually guided to do all this from the standpoint of everything fell into place. She gave up her business, and the supplier for her will also retire. Like everybody around her, it's like, the time is up, guys. Let's let's move on.
Yeah, it was really great. I loved that. I love it when people are spontaneous. I mean, I try to be like that in my life. My husband and I, we go on a lot of great vacations, and we never uh-huh. really book them until a couple of weeks before. And we know most people book them 6 months
yeah.
ahead, a year ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, we went to Dubai on 2 weeks' notice. We went to Hawaii on 2 weeks' notice. I mean, we always just go last minute, and it's really
yeah.
fun that way.
That's awesome. Do you have a personal home sweet home story you can share with us?
I do, and it's interesting. I wrote this story, and I started asking people in my office, and it turned out mm-hmm. that almost everybody in my office had the same dream that I had, and I don't know if you or your listeners have had this dream,
mm-hmm.
but it's a dream where you're in your home, and all of a sudden you see a new room that you didn't know was there, or a new
mm-hmm.
hallway that leads to a bunch of rooms that you didn't know were there, or a new space under the stairs that you never knew was there. But in this
mm-hmm.
dream, you just find this new space. And it turned out that almost every person in my office has had the same dream. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I read something on the internet from a woman
mm-hmm.
who analyzes dreams, and she says
mm-hmm.
that this dream about finding new space is a dream that people react to differently. Some people are frightened by it because the new space represents a challenge, and other people
mm-hmm.
are excited because they view the new space as an opportunity to expand their lives. So I wrote about that.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic. This is a great show so far, and we're close to the end of the hour. So this is an opportunity for you to share your great recipe for living.
Well, I think that this book, since it's about home, really is like a way of viewing life overall. And
mm-hmm.
I came up with some tips from this book. And one is that a favorite possession can make any place a home. No matter where you go, if you have some favorite thing you always take with you and you
mm-hmm.
put it up on the wall or put it on the coffee table, that's home, your home. Another tip is listen to your heart. You know, if your heart says to you, I have to move to Sedona, move to Sedona.
Mm-hmm.
Another tip is you never move away from your memories because your memories are in your head, so it doesn't matter what happens, they go with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really leaving your home. Your home goes with you because home is really an emotional thing that resides in your head. Another tip, very important, and this applies to life as well, home ownership requires a sense of humor, and life requires a sense of humor, like when your child flushes Winnie the Pooh down the toilet. And then a final tip from the book is don't be afraid to call a professional, and that really pertains to all life. Don't be afraid to ask for help. There are plenty of people out there who want to help you.
Those are beautiful recipes for living. I mean, it's just wonderful. Amy, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Dr. Eric Pearl. Dr. Pearl is the founder of Reconnective Healing and a pioneer in the field of energy medicine or quantum healthcare. Dr. Pearl and I will be discussing his best-selling book, The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself. The book is currently published in 37 languages. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Amy, it has been a pleasure as usual. Thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.